G'day listeners, welcome back to Gaberhood. I'm your host, Ed Wilson, and today we are going to get some freaking perspective. I am chatting with a young man called Karan Negrani, and he is going to take us through his experience of being gay and disabled. Do you have any idea how you would function being blind in a seeing world? We ask questions like, are gays more shallow, and does that extend to disability? We talk about the dangers of feeling it's not okay to be gay, while also being online in chat rooms at the age of 13. Things come up like Miss India 2003, Brazilian supermodels and acai berries. We talk about being hit on by a woman repeatedly who believes you're a gentleman suitor from her youth. We talk about victimhood more generally, victimhood amongst the gays, victimhood amongst disabled people, and what to do with that. We talk about loving life and being blind, and I think that you'll find Karan is a very entertaining, slightly provocative, you know, straight shooting guy, and I really hope you enjoy this episode. Hey, Karan, how you going?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, pleasure to have you here. Welcome to the podcast. I've got a lot of questions for you today.
Bring it on. I can't wait. I'm super excited.
Are you excited? I don't know. It sounds kind of fake and cheesy. Are you sure?
No, not at all. I love this. I mean, I normally don't like talking about myself, but I think lately there have been so many layers that have, I guess, unraveled as such. So, yeah, no, ask away. I'm super excited.
Nice. Alrighty. What are the basics about you that you would like the audience to know first?
Okay, so this is going to be hard because I think I'm fairly complicated, but let me try and simplify it for you. Mm-hmm. I'm 36 years old. I am gay. I'm happily married. I've been with my husband for about 7 years now. I was also born with a degenerative genetic eye condition called retinitis pigmentosa. It's quite rare. Usually it's 1 in 4,000 people that have it across the globe. But of course, me being me, the type of gene that I've got is even more rare. So it starts off with night blindness and loss of sight, like peripheral vision. And then in cases like mine, it's affected my hearing as well. So I guess the best way to explain it is when you look ahead, someone with normal eyesight would see 180 degrees from left to right. For me, I see less than 3 degrees. Also, I have zero night vision, zero side vision. So I use my cane everywhere I go. At night, it's pitch black for me. I can't see a thing. And in a few years, even what I have will go. So I guess that's the gist of my medical situation and as a person, I am, you know, quite creative. I like having fun. I like spending time with my friends. However, we'll get into this later, but my social life has changed drastically ever since my eyes got worse. Mm.
Yeah, we will get into everything we get into, which will be quite a lot, but obviously never everything. But I really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing your truth and being exactly who you are. I find every single gay man that I interview to just be fascinating just as an individual. And so you've already qualified. You're everything you need to be. I really appreciate you coming.
Thanks for having me.
Alrighty. Oh, actually, you know, I want the audience to know as well. So this is actually related to how we met. My sister posted an article that you were in the Australian Government Broadcaster. You made the newspaper, you've been in blogs and stuff. You are, I don't know, is activist the right word? You're enjoying yourself spending your time raising awareness of what it's like to live with retinitis pigmentosa, which I guess we can just shorten to RP from now on if you want to.
Yes.
And my dad has it as well. He's just about completely blind. His night vision is awful. Actually, during the day, he's still pretty good, but I remember my granddad as well, so it's in my gene pool. It doesn't seem as if I have it at this point, but I understand that that could change. And so my sister pointed it out, and it turns out you live in kind of remote southwestern Australia, right near my parents. And I was like, oh, this is too good to be true. I wonder if this guy's on Instagram. Yeah, so I reached out, and then I saw the pride flag, and I was like, oh, shit, this is meant to be. And we had a good hour or two of just texting back and forth and just enjoying getting to know each other and having a chat, right?
Correct.
Yeah,
correct.
That was lovely. Yeah. So I thought I'd invite you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Pleasure.
I feel like this is a story that needs to be told because usually disability and gay don't go in the sentence, you know?
Right.
We've never heard of it really. Like, I've never ever met someone who's gay with a disability. So it took me a lot of time to even sort of put myself out there. Because I'm sure you can vouch for this, that the gay community can be quite shallow and it's all about appearance and six pack and tan and, you know, gym body and all that sort of stuff.
And then, hot wheelchairs and walking assistance and hearing aids. Yeah.
Yeah. And Gucci canes and, I don't know, Balenciaga hearing aids.
I'm so ready for you to spit fire on the vapid gays, but we will get there. We will get there. We'll start from the start, though. So when, if ever, did you realize that you were gay and different? Different. Not G-A-Y gay, but did you ever feel different in a gay way that now you look back and you're like, well, that's a gay thing?
Yeah, so this is almost embarrassing, but it's more a reflection of my mom. She used to watch The Bold and the Beautiful.
A wonderful show.
Yeah, right.
Yep.
And I remember, like, back then, it was quite a steamy show. There was, a lot of sex scenes and everything. And for some reason, my parents were okay with us watching it with them. So I remember, for some reason, I was always drawn to this guy called Ross on that show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if there was a sex scene or there was, a romantic scene, I would just keep looking at him.
Mm.
And I thought that was normal. Because at that, no one talks about sexuality or attraction at that age.
How old were you?
Oh, I would have been super young, maybe four.
Four or five. Wow. Okay.
I mean, yeah, it's just, it was not a sexual feeling. It was just a sense of attraction.
Yeah.
I was like, why am I drawn to him?
Yeah.
You know, because every guy's talking about that chick or this, you know, how beautiful she is, or
especially a playgroup, right? You rock up with the other 4 year olds and you're like, are you doing a girl in your Play-Doh?
So that was the first thing for me, but it didn't sink in at that stage. So that was the first time. Yeah.
Right. That's beautiful. So when did you understand that you were gay, like G-A-Y gay?
I almost feel like I went through an asexual phase because I think a part of me realized that I was different because everyone was talking about this chick and that chick, and I was just not into the chick. I wasn't really into guys as well at that time, but I would say the first time, I think the first time I felt like I was gay, I would have been about maybe 11.
Mm.
11 or 12, I had in recollection, I feel like it was a crush. But back then, I would keep looking at this guy and I was like, what is it about him? I just like looking at him. I just like talking to him. You know, I was really innocent back then. Mm. I can't say that anymore.
Yeah.
But back then, I was really innocent. So yeah, that was for me. I think that's when the penny dropped. It was like, okay, so you're into guys.
Mm. and you understood that beyond just how you felt, you're like, this maybe means I'm gay, like G-A-Y gay.
So you see, I grew up in India, okay? So in India, there was no conversation about sexuality as such.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, it was really different.
Mm.
Back then, there was no sex ed. There was no conversations about, you know, any of this. So because this was not something that was even talked about back then, I felt like an alien. I felt like there's something wrong with me.
Mm.
I felt like I couldn't even suss out if someone else was in a similar position as me, just in case.
You thought you might be the only one on earth kind of thing.
No, I didn't feel that way. It was more like I felt alone. I felt like there was no one I could talk to.
Right.
And I mean, that leads me to and I guess this is a disclaimer, it could be uncomfortable for other people to listen to, but I got onto a website back then, which basically, in retrospect now, just at least, so there was this interactive website where you could get on and chat with people. And I remember I heard from someone once that they have a man-to-man chat as well. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, ooh, okay, maybe I'm not alone. So I went onto that chat, pretended to be 18. I was only like 12 or 13.
Yep.
And went onto the man-to-man, and I was suddenly like, whoa. Because back then on that man-to-man were older men, older men that were just looking for sex, you know. So for them, they were really straight up. And for me, this is the first time I've stepped into an arena like that.
Mm.
And I had this thing in my head that I wanted to see what a gay guy looks like, because back then there was no representation.
Yeah.
I didn't even know what a gay guy looks like, you know. So for me, like, there was this thing, like, if you're gay, you look different. Because I'd seen there was nothing, because there was no, like, even films and stuff that would have gay representation would get censored back then, you know. So growing up with that, and then I got onto this website, and I was stupid enough. Keep in mind, my eyes weren't too good even then, like, my night blindness had started. So to just see what does a gay guy look like. So I started a conversation with this guy, and I remember he was maybe in his 40s at that time. And gay men being gay men, I'm sure he lied. He was probably older.
Yeah.
And I gave him he wanted to pick me up, because in conversation, I said to him that I was 16, because I was 13. I didn't want him to get a shot.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I said that, and I'm like, meet you across the road. I gave him the address of the neighbors, like, diagonally across, so I could sort of see from my balcony.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said to me, when I see you, I'll turn I'll flicker my flashlights and then come and get in the car.
Mm.
Now, I had no desire to get into the car. I just wanted to see what he looks
like. Yeah.
Because my eyes were worse, I had to go closer.
Oh, right.
Now, I hid behind a bush, and then suddenly I see these lights flicker, and I was like, fuck, he's seen me. I'm stuck. And instead of running back home, I felt the sense of obligation that I now have to get into the car, because he's seen me now, which means he knows I'm gay. And if I don't do what he says I need to do, he will tell everyone about me. So this is my childhood baby brain talking.
Yeah.
And then I got into the car, and as expected, it didn't go too well. It wasn't a really pleasant experience. I got dropped back. And then I sort of panicked, because stuff had happened that I didn't even know happens. And now I'm stuck with this dilemma where I'm sure I need to see a doctor, but how do I explain the situation to anyone? Because essentially I put myself in that position, and my parents connect the dots, they will know that I'm gay. So I'm sitting, imagine a 13-year-old kid in this dilemma, like, do I tell them? Do I just deal with whatever's going on? So I told my sister and her friend, and I was like, you have to promise me you won't tell dad, because my dad was an army officer, so he was like one of those, you know, badass men, quite aggro back then. And so sure enough, so they took me to the doctor. They like did a checkup. There was some little minor damage that needed to be fixed and everything. And then fine, because I felt like that was it. The next morning I wake up and my dad knows about it, and he's after me to catch that guy. And he's like sitting there like a detective with a pen and paper. What did he look like? Blah, blah, blah. And there was this full panic in my head, because if I give the right description and if they find the guy will say, well, actually, your son messaged me online. So that your son is gay. So there was this full dilemma. And I mean, that was so chaotic. Like, forget the trauma of what had happened to me. It became this whole thing of where I had to lie about the truth.
Yeah.
Because if they find out the truth, then I'm fucked.
Yeah. So, and that endangers you, right? These stories are far too common. And the common denominator is the kid can't be honest.
Correct.
And the parents and the society won't accept it. And that endangers us.
Yeah.
Big time.
And let me tell you, I come from a really progressive family. My family is not conservative or anything like that. But
and still, you were under no doubt that it was way worse to have them find out your secret than for anything else to happen.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
Yeah. Man, thank you so much for sharing that.
No, that's okay. So then I got into this whole phase of lying about what he looked like, lying about the car.
Mm.
I remember I made it out to be this story where I was just walking outside and this guy pulled me in the car. And my dad was like, that makes no sense. How can someone just pull a teenager, like a guy, into the car?
Yeah.
And then he wanted a description of the car. And then he called the cops. And just nothing was adding up. So I ended up looking like a complete idiot.
Yeah.
And till today, yeah, my sister's like my best friend. But I told her, I'll never forgive you for that. And she said, look, I was 16. I didn't know what to do. How would you react if I told you the same thing?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, you're right. I kind of get it. I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. The real thing at fault here is that there's no protection for the child because the child cannot be honest. It's not clear to the child that it's absolutely safe to be gay. Because if you are, you're going to do things like this. You're going to look for men. And if you look for adult men and you're still a child, there is a massive power imbalance and you're easy prey and you will fall victim to things as... I mean, you did. I'm careful with the word victim, but you did think you ended up doing things you didn't want to do. And ultimately, that was because you were disempowered in every possible way. And part of that was because you just could not. Your truth was unacceptable.
Correct. And I think what people need to try and understand as well is this is in India. This is in the late 90s, early 2000s. So things like this were unheard of there.
Yeah. Know? But at the same time, Karan, it could have happened on my street. It could have been exactly the same in Perth, Australia, when I was the same age.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It's and then it makes me think of the United States at the moment, right, with the don't say gay thing. I want all of those don't say gay politicians or anyone in the world to listen to a story just like yours, because it's not the first I've heard and it won't be the last, where exactly this thing happens. The child is in danger because of your policies of not openly discussing the existence of homosexuality, the chance that your child could be homosexual, and what that means for them and how they can keep themselves safe and that you love them no matter what. And none of this happens, and children are unsafe because of your decision not to accept and embrace what is a naturally occurring aspect of human existence. What a fucking shame.
Nailed it.
It kills me. Right, so let's keep making this podcast and telling everybody so that we can protect more children.
Yes. So I guess for me next, that was quite a bad experience. And then I didn't really, I mean, at 13 to, I don't want to use the R word, but it was pretty much that. For me to then move on from that, I was extremely cautious. And then I just knew deep down that I had to get out of there.
Mm.
I knew that if I want to be myself, I have to get out of there.
Mm.
So because I had perhaps the most progressive parents that I'd met, and even with them, like maybe I didn't give them enough credit. Maybe if I came out to them earlier, but I feel like my dad, being from the army, he had a lot of rage.
Mm.
So, you know, I love my dad now. Everything is all good. But back then he had anger issues. So, you know, I would cop it a lot because I wasn't the poster boy of a son. So my sister was Miss India in 2003.
Wow.
And then, yeah. And then her career sort of took off and then she became a public figure.
Wow.
And for a while, it became all about her, which was fantastic because I could hide behind that shell. So instead of talking about me, everyone wanted to know about my sister. So I'm talking about my sister. Mm. And then when I reached about 17, I knew that I needed to be my own self. So I started sort of telling my mom and dad that I want to study graphic design and filmmaking and that sort of stuff. And back then, there was no decent, I would say, university that would teach that there.
Mm.
So I went to Malaysia first.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Malaysia when I was 18. It was like this really arty campus, which was really cool. But I was topping my classes by putting in maybe 70% of work. And I wasn't the most clever school kid back then. So my mom and dad were like, there's something not right here. Why is he topping his classes? How is he topping his classes?
Mm.
And then my dad sort of wanted to sort of understand the entire thing. And it sort of turned out, though, even though that university is managed by Curtin University, it was in Malaysia, at least, because it was full of international students where the rich, spoiled Malaysian kids would come and hang out sort of thing.
Right, right.
So even in Malaysia, because it was a Muslim country, the gay thing was a complete secret there. And I got into this, I'm still friends with so many of them, where we would go out clubbing all the time. And I remember I would go out clubbing and then I would fake that I have a headache or something. And I would leave early and go meet someone at a gay club. So there was a lot of lying even back then, you know. So, I mean, once you come out, you just look back and you're like, what an idiot. Why did you do that to yourself? Why did you put yourself through that? But then you're like, what option did you have back then, you know? So anyway, from Malaysia, I moved to Perth. This is in 2005. Even when I moved to Perth, I was in student housing and there was a lot of frat boy culture there because there were a lot of American students. It was all about, you know, which chick you're going to sleep with tonight and how drunk you're going to get. And again, I couldn't fit in even there. And in my head, I was like, what's wrong with you? Okay, so you couldn't fit in India. You couldn't fit in Malaysia. Now you're in Australia where things are more progressive when you're still not able to fit in. So anyway, I don't know where to go with this. But yeah, so that's when I moved to Australia in 2005. And my coming out story, I'll say for when you ask me about it, but it was quite funny.
Yeah, that's the next question. You know, I let you run with all of that because you're answering a lot of the questions that I usually ask. It's absolutely perfect, Karen. Your coming out story, hit me. Let's do it.
Okay, so so now I live in Australia. I'm living in student housing. And I always used to admire these, you know, these badass chicks for some reason, like Gisele Bündchen, like even though I was gay, I had a big crush on her. I thought she was like sex on legs.
Is she a pop star or someone?
No, no, she's a supermodel. So Brazilian. Yeah.
Ooh, okay.
I remember so in the marketing group, we had to create a campaign for Mother, which was that energy drink.
Right.
And Mother had this acai berry that came from Brazil. And we used that angle to talk about Brazilian supermodels. And then I was watching, I think it was some fashion show where they're in lingerie. I can't remember the brand. With the angel wings. What are they called? Anyway, so I'll keep watching this fashion show. And my housemates would sometimes knock on the door and I'm watching it. And I didn't realize that if I was straight, that would look really creepy and sleazy that I'm sitting watching semi-naked women in a room. And they were like, why are you watching this? And I was like, oh, isn't this? Anyway, now I'm going off track. So I got a new phone. So my dad bought me a new phone when I went to see them and I gave my old phone to my mom. Now, my mom has the same condition as I do. So mom is blind and teenage brain. I forgot to delete the messages. So I get a call from my mom randomly. Like, I remember I just come back from class and my mom's like, who's Dave? I'm like, huh? She's like, I was like, who are you talking about? She's like, okay. Who's Declan?
Oh, God. What a treasure trove, right? Imagine receiving someone's secondhand phone with none of their messages deleted. You're like, fuck yeah, this is going to be great.
My mom is blind, okay? I'm going, how the fuck? Like, what are you on about? And then she just mentioned a few more names and then she started laughing. I'm like, what's so funny? And she's like, your secret's out. I know you're gay.
Oh.
And then she started laughing and she's like, it's okay. I know you're gay. It's okay. It's okay. And I got so pissed off for some reason because when you're outed, it's a different feeling. And I was just like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Oh. I'm getting off the phone now. I'm not going to talk to you. And I hung up. And I didn't talk to my mom for 2 days. And I remember she would keep calling. I would keep ignoring the calls. Finally, I mustered up the courage. I called her back. And then she was like, I was struggling with your phone. It was really slow. So your dad was trying to reset it. And then he read all these messages. And my mom was like, surely you should, you know, you should be smarter than that. You should know how to delete your messages.
Yeah.
And that was it. And I asked my mom and I was like, how are you with it? And she was like, it's fine. She's like, I cried for 2 days. I cried. She's like, I don't know why I cried, but I cried.
Do you know why mums cry when this happens or why I think?
I think my just I think for my mum, what I got from that was it was the fact that I didn't share that with her. It was the fact that she now is mourning the loss of her family, because back then, you know, somehow you don't think gay people would have families as such. So she was mourning the loss of a potential wife, grandchildren, also being in India, a sense of shame, the stigma, having to answer questions. So that's what I took from that. Why? What were you trying to say?
Yeah, no, I think the first two are more important. I think they're definitely very real. No matter what, right, our parents build a version of us into their heads. We're so important to them, and they dream of our futures and they want the best for us. And so no matter what, if you come out and your parents didn't really know that, no matter what, it's not about stigma or judgment or having a problem with it. The version of you that they held in their hearts with so much love and so much importance, that version of you dies. And the real you, the gay you, has to start taking up space in their heart, and they need to get attached to that as well. But a lot of their dreams and thoughts and expectations die. And it's nobody's fault, right? It's like a very natural kind of consequence of just living.
Correct.
But again, it goes back to,
yeah, it's like you're mourning the death of a person that,
right, exactly, that's exactly right. But if your mum or all of us had the idea that, and I'm sure it's hopefully our generation and our children will be like this, we'll speak to 2, 3, 4 year olds and be like, yeah, some boys like boys, some girls like girls, and parents will genuinely in their hearts know, my child could be anything. They could be a different gender. They could express themselves differently. They could want whatever partners they want. And I'm okay with whoever they are. I love whoever they are. And then it won't happen anymore. You'll be like, oh, okay. You know, you might shed a tear because it's an important moment, like a coming of age or a, you know, a special event. It's like, oh, that is delightful and charming that, you know, my child is straight, or my child is gay, or my child is bi, or my child doesn't know.
Yeah.
And it'll just be an important family moment and event, rather than what it currently is, which is the default of, oh, the dreams I had for you have died.
Yeah. And I think also back then, so you've got to remember, homosexuality in India at that time was illegal. So being gay was a crime, which means you would
get
in prison. Parents had this fear that if you're gay, you're going to get AIDS.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we all know, you know, gays like to party, take drugs, die, and sign pacts with the devil. That's all they do, isn't it? Oh, and prey on children. Don't forget that one.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Right. So that was my coming out story. And then my dad didn't speak to me for 2 weeks. And it wasn't that he didn't speak to me. He just needed to process, and then he called up, and he was so sweet. He was like, I love you no matter what, and I'm always here for you. So my coming out story has been really good for someone who grew up in a culture like I did.
Yeah.
And I came out to my grandparents, and my grandfather was like, okay, what's your point?
That's lovely.
He's so sweet. He was just like, what's your point?
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm just telling you. He's like, so? Well, how does that affect me? And I was like, I'm just telling you, I'm different. He's like, what's the point? He kept saying, what's your point? I don't get it. What are you trying to tell me? He's like, I didn't know this about you, but how is this going to change anything between us? But that was my mum's parents. My dad's parents were so liberal in one way, but so conservative in other ways. I remember my grandmother was hell-bent on finding me a wife.
Mm-hmm.
And I left at the age of 18. I just turned 18 when I left. Mm. And every time I saw her.
Perfect marrying age.
Like, yeah, my God. And then she got dementia as well.
Oh, no.
So it just got worse and worse and worse.
I know that dementia is a horrible disease and a lot of horrible things happen, but a lot of cute stories come out of it as well. I saw a video recently where a lady fell in love with her own cat again every single day. She's like, oh, you're friendly, aren't you? Oh, I like you. It's so adorable. Were you like remarried off every second day?
No. So I was actually the marketing manager for Alzheimer's Australia, WA.
Okay.
And part of our job required us to spend time with people that have dementia.
Mm.
And I remember there was this lady. She was really adorable. She would have been in her mid-80s, but every time I saw her, she was dressed up like she's getting married. Like she had full eyeshadow, lipstick, pearls on, and she would keep hitting on me because she thought I was some guy from back then.
Oh, and it was hilarious. I love these stories. It's so human, right? It's so raw. It's so real. Yeah. And it's so, yeah, they're very visceral stories. Yeah, so she keeps hitting on you. How did she hit on you?
She was just saying, my.
What a handsome young man you are.
But it was really like old school cute, like my, oh my.
Oh,
you know, it was like that. And like, as a gay guy, whenever I hit on by a chick, I would get really uncomfortable because I didn't know how to act. But when she was doing it, it was so cute.
It felt flattering.
I kept going with it. I kept smiling. She wanted me to sit next to her, and she wouldn't let me spend time with any of the other ladies.
Oh, that's the best. Oh my God, that is so adorable.
Good story. Yeah.
Oh, I know exactly what you mean. It's so nice that you got to have that and share that with her. That's beautiful. When a woman is interested in you and she shows interest, it's two times in my life, two younger ladies. I think the first time we were both 16, 17. And the second time I was like 23. And this girl, I was in Air Force Cadets, and she found out that I'd told people through a grapevine. She was my last kind of last hope girl. I was like, if I can't like her, I think I'm definitely gay. This isn't going to happen. And she had no idea. And so anyway, came around through to her through other people. And then she's like, oh my God, like Ed likes me. I should definitely return the favor or whatever. So we're at dinner and she's like playing footsies with me under the table, but there's like 20 people at this table. So she's like winking and nodding at me. She's like, I'm like, yeah, I very clearly get the picture that someone has told you that I told them that I like you. But then she starts really fucking kicking me. Like it actually hurt. And I was like, fucking hell, like stop. So I'd like look at her with my big eyes, like stop it.
Yeah.
I was so uncomfortable. And I was like, you know, that was really like, oh, I'm definitely gay. This is awful.
So I remember every Wednesday night when I was at uni in Perth, we would have karaoke at the local tab. And it was guaranteed everyone gets drunk. And also Wednesday night at Connections, which is this gay club in Perth, they had lesbian mud wrestling.
Yay.
That was also a time for me to go meet guys and, you know, have some fun. So I remember Wednesday night, there was this housemate of mine. I'm not going to mention her name because she's, but she was hitting on me and she was quite drunk and she kept kissing my neck and I would keep like, you know, I kept using the whole gentleman thing. Oh, you're drunk. Anyway, after maybe a couple of hours, I sneaked out and I went out to Connections and I must have hooked up with a guy there who pretty much gave me hickeys all over my neck. And the next morning I woke up and I was like, fuck, how am I going to hide this? And I was like, oh, hang on. She was kissing your neck last night. You can blame her.
Yay.
And then the whole day, and then I became this hero. You know, this guy walking with these hickeys on his neck.
Dude, you were a legend.
Yeah, that poor chick, though, she was so embarrassed and I didn't have the heart to tell her that.
Oh, yeah, you totally double-crossed her, man. Oh, shit. You were a legend for a day. You were a straight legend. What did it feel like? I don't think I'll ever know that. Did you get high fives? Were all the boys like, yeah, Karen?
Yeah, I did. And I think I got a lot of, why didn't you hook up with her? Why did it stop there? And I was like, oh, you know, she was too drunk. She was too drunk.
I'm a gentleman, yeah.
Yeah, I'm a gentleman.
That sort of stuff, yeah. That's cute. Nice one, mate. All right, moving on. This is the point at which we have a kiki on your chosen topic. You have introduced your medical situation, the basics of RP. I would love for you to take this time to just tell the audience whatever it is you want them to hear and want them to know. And personally, I'm just interested in what's driving you in doing what you're doing now? Like why and what's the goal and what do you want to come from it and what does it mean to you?
Sure. So if you've read my articles, ABC articles, I've actually said, because of my disability, I feel like I've had to come out of two closets. Mm-hmm. And the reason I say that is because obviously the gay one is, you know, self-explanatory, but the second one, my eyes look completely normal. If you were sitting right now across the table from me and you didn't see my cane, you would think I'm totally normal. So people have this misconception that if you're blind, you have cloudy white eyes, or you wear some dark glasses and you can't make eye contact and you can't see at all. It's like all black. And this was quite hard for me to explain to people because retinitis pigmentosa is quite rare. I mean, you of all people would know that because of your family. Again, growing up in the culture that I did, there was a lot of don't tell anyone, don't tell anyone, don't tell anyone. So my mom always sort of hide her disability. You know, she would always hold my dad's arm and everyone was like, oh, they're so romantic. But she was actually, you know, for guidance. So,
oh, that's cute.
I mean, they're separated now. So that's a whole other story. But it took me a long time to get used to my disability. I lived in denial for a long time because also I think being gay, there's a lot of emphasis on the way you look. And no matter how hot someone looks, if they've got a cane and they're in the blind box, they're just not even considered.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I sort of in my 20s, I had a lot of fun. Let's just say that.
We know what you mean, Karen. We know what you're saying.
So I was in a long-term relationship that broke up. I broke up with that guy. And then I started to, the world of Grindr had just started. And
oh, did you have an iPhone?
Sorry?
Did you have an iPhone?
I did have an iPhone.
Because I remember for years it was only on iPhone and not on Android.
Oh, I don't know that.
Right.
But we were together and he was quite a possessive guy. So there was no access to any online, even to make friends or whatever. So now I'm separated at this age of, I think it was 30. Because when you're with someone and you've got a disability, you sort of, you know, you depend on your partner to guide you and that sort of stuff. So I got away with not using a cane, even though I needed to. So my ex at that time would guide me, you know, and would drop me up to work and, oh, I would take a taxi, all that sort of stuff. So I was out at work because I needed to be, because I was ignoring people. I was walking into things they needed to know. But in the gay world, there was this stigma, if you have a disability, you're ugly. That's just how it is.
You've said it's the gay world several times, but I think straight people with similar disabilities, if you go to a club and you're blind with a cane, I think you get a similar response. I'm not saying it's a good response, but I'm saying it's similar.
I think it depends to an extent. You're right that you don't see many people with disabilities out and about. But then I am in touch with a few people that have found love despite their cane. So I'm friends with Rachel Lierka, who was on The Voice. She was season one. She has the same condition as I do. Mm. And she's now marrying a guy who actually approached her after the shows. And he, you know, with the cane and everything, he just fell in love with her. Aww. So there are sweet stories like that as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so it's adorable. I always tell Rachel, like, you're that's such a beautiful story. But I think in the gay world, it's all about six-pack, perfect tan, you know.
Now, again, are you sure that it's not just because the only gay world we really have access to is the apps and clubs and pubs? And on apps, it's not really obvious or apparent or understandable what your blindness means or what that shows up as. And in the clubs and pubs, I mean, it's just a, you know, I don't know if you find this offensive or something, but it's an awkward place sometimes.
Also, you would never see films, but I mean, you could barely see some gay character on a show. Now, you give that gay character a disability. There was just no representation.
Yeah.
So you just end up feeling really alone. So
definitely.
But back then, I got on Grindr and I remember I started doing little things like if I went on a date at night, I would pick a super bright place and I would get there early, like half an hour, 45 minutes.
You're hiding yourself.
Yeah. So I would get there super early so I know what the place looks like. I would pick the brightest table. I would get a drink so I don't need to get up and get a drink so I'm not stumbling or whatever.
Yeah.
So everyone's phase of, I mean, I was putting myself at risk, to be honest with you. I was
definitely.
I was, so I hid it for a long time.
See, that sucks, right? Because you're, the story that you like so much about your friend who someone fell in love with her, knowing she was blind, seeing that she was blind, you prevented that from happening for yourself in that scenario because you did, you went out of your way to hide it.
Because we, come on, let's not lie here. We know how superficial the gay world can be. I'm not saying everyone's like that, but you get, like, if you look at the way Grindr works, it's literally send me nudes or block, or yeah, send me a shirtless photo or block, you know?
That's how it is. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, having said that, I met my husband on Grindr. So I'm not saying everyone's like that, but
I guess I'm just saying if you don't give someone, a gay someone, a chance of loving you for being gay and blind, then they can't. That's all I'm saying. And I guess, yeah, yes, the gays and, it, you know, I've got a lived experience as well. Vapid looks, yes. But if you don't show up as who you are, how can someone love you for who you are?
So you're right, but when you open with that, it's a different thing.
Absolutely, right? Yeah, so 99 out of 100 rejections, yeah. I'm sure. It would be awful.
So what I wanted to do was start the conversation.
Get them to know you first.
Get them to know me first.
Yeah.
And then sort of say, oh, by the way,
yeah,
I have this as well.
Yeah. How did that go?
It went... Look, I ended up hiding it for whatever reason because I felt like the energy would change. I would suddenly
too many rejections.
None. It wasn't even rejection. It was suddenly like this guy who's really wanted to catch up with me, really wants to see me, we meet and we talk, and then I tell him.
Yeah.
And then the sudden sense of the energy has changed a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And I remember back then because I was single, like going out is a big thing and we would go out and I did not want to take my cane. Imagine showing up as a gay guy with a cane at a gay club. and, you know, like I can like pole dance to my own cane, but no, it wasn't like that. But
did you ever? Because you do today. You do today.
I do it now.
Exactly. I am very interested in just gently challenging you on the idea that gay plus disability equals somehow worse than straight plus disability. Like if it's 1 + 1 = 2, somehow gay plus disability, 1 + 1, and somehow it's equaling 3 to you. Like it's extra bad to have both because it's absolutely something to do with gay. You going to stand by that?
Yes, 100%.
Yeah.
100%. So then going back to the clubs, now I'm stumbling, I'm walking into people. I would get a lot like, what the fuck's wrong with you? Can you not see me?
Yeah.
But then I was like, how do I do this? And then I was like, I really want to go out because I wanted to experience that Grindr phase because when I was with my ex, I couldn't get to experience that. Not that I wanted to.
Yeah,
but I wanted to experience this whole new world of online dating, you know, because back when I was single, it was Gator. That was it, you know.
Right.
So I would go out and I would struggle. So then I was like, you know, I have an idea. Just pretend you're drunk all the time.
Yeah.
So because if you're drunk, you can walk into people. And then I did start to drink a lot. So my going out experiences were not – I had my fair share of fun. I'm not going to lie. But it was always like – I'm lying about something, you know, I'm not being myself.
Yeah.
So I would, you know, like I remember this is what I said to the ABC as well. I said I would go on a date at 9 o'clock in the morning for a coffee before work. And I would be, I would pretend to be drunk from the night before because when I walk into a restaurant or cafe, it's quite dark for me. Mm. I can't see. So I'm like walking into tables and chairs because I don't have my cane with me.
Mm.
So how do you justify doing that? So I was just like, so drunk from the night before. So it was almost like I'm okay being an alcoholic.
Yeah.
But not okay being with a gay man with a disability.
Yeah.
And so I have so many stories. One of the biggest things was when I would hook up with someone, people like having the lights off.
Oh yeah.
Now for me, if the lights are off, I can't see anything. It's pitch black for me.
Yeah.
So every time there would be this, no, can you leave it on? Can you leave it? Like, why? Why? You know? And I was like, no. And then they would turn the light off and then I couldn't see. I would get a lot of, are you okay? Are you okay? You know, are you drunk? Like, what's going on with you? Because I couldn't see them.
Yeah.
So it was really stressful for me.
I bet. Yeah.
Really, really stressful. So at one, yeah. So I was in denial for a long time.
Mm.
a really long time. And now that I'm out of the shell, I am all out. I don't want anyone else to feel like I did. So I am just putting, I had a really successful career that I had to give up. You know, I've lost my independence. I'm blessed. The funny thing is, people look at me and they're like, oh, poor guy. You know, I'm like, trust me when I say, other than not having my eyesight, touch wood, I can't even imagine what being happier would be like, because I am blessed to have the husband that I do. I'm blessed to have the family that I do.
You live in a beautiful part of the world.
I live in a beautiful part of the world. It's just like, I almost feel bad sometimes, like even though I'm going blind with a disability and losing hearing, I feel like I end up consoling someone else because of their problems.
Absolutely. That makes perfect sense to me. Well, I suppose I work with people a lot on sorting their shit out, but we can have a problem with anything. And if that's true, we can also realize how not to have a problem with anything. And your life experiences are a huge example of that. And it's now on my bucket list officially, Karen, to take you to a gay club and have you fucking pole dance on your own cane and realize the gays will be interested in you. If you show up and you do you, you will win the hearts and the minds and possibly other organs of men who see you loving yourself, who see you being you and enjoying yourself, not obnoxiously, but naturally.
Yeah. But can I tell you something, right? So I literally don't care now. If you'd asked me this maybe 2 years ago or even 1 year ago, I would have said that sounds great. But I, like, for me, my perspective on life has changed. Now, for me, life is, you know, I how do I even explain it? When I was single back then, it was all about, oh, I'm lonely. I need someone, you know, I need to hook up with someone.
Yeah. And you were young too, right? I think it's a common story. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, like now I really wouldn't care. I don't go to a gay club because I remember being there. I'm not saying all gay clubs are like that. All gay people are like that. It's just, there is this, I'm going to get attacked for saying this, but there's a sense of desperation when you go to a gay club.
Because absolutely.
You get it, right?
Okay, So let's not pretend we're not all beautifully damaged goods. You know the Japanese art of kintsugi, which is putting back broken things together with like golden, what's the filler or the glue in between the bits of broken pottery? It's called kintsugi. And that's what I think gay men have the opportunity to be. None of us avoided shame. None of us avoided, shame and all of the side effects of that. But we can put ourselves to get back together absolutely beautifully and be as functional as we ever were or were ever born to be, or even perhaps even more beautiful because of our damage, because of our stories, because of who we have become through adversity and struggle and adventure.
Oh, absolutely. I remember this reminded me of this one incident where I was younger and I wasn't earning as well that time. And I remember some friends had come over, friends, quote unquote, and we were going to go to The Court, which is a gay bar in Perth.
Yep. And there's two. We've mentioned both of them, The Court you're right. And Connections.
Connections, yeah. And we'd finished our drinks and I was like, okay, let's go. You know, the train leaves in like 20 minutes. And they were like, train? We don't use trains, darling. We have to call a taxi.
Right.
So I was like, wow, fuck you. Okay. Not everyone. You know, so it's these little things.
You know why? They were probably afraid of the train because they're obviously gay and they didn't feel safe. And then they'll instead of saying, we don't feel safe on a train, we're vulnerable, we're scared, we're weak or something, they'll say, oh, we're better than that as a defense mechanism.
That's not what it was about, though.
No, status, money.
It was status, yeah. It was like, we want to show up in a cab.
So
like,
why would somebody do that? Why would somebody posture and fluff out their feathers and be like, no, we're better than them? Because they're compensating. Because
unfortunately, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Who's got a fitter body, who's got a better tan.
But why? But why, Karen? Because they're just compensating.
It's compensating, yeah, because they're not really... When you're seeking validation all the time based on...
You don't like yourself.
Yeah. So that's what it is. And that's what I'm saying. At 36, I'm chunky. I don't have the... I used to have a six-pack when I was younger.
I bet it was gorgeous.
I don't have that body anymore. I but I'm so happy. And I think this is where people look at me like I'm on drugs sometimes, because I'm like, no, I'm genuine. I can't imagine being happier, like, other than not being,
I love life. You know,
I love life. So when I see these, there are a lot of people with disabilities where they don't have that strength that I do. And people just assume that you're just born with the strength. You're not. I've had days where I didn't want to leave the bed. I've had days where I've questioned whether I want to live or not. I've been there.
Mm.
I've been there where I've hit rock bottom and I'm questioning every little thing. And after coming out of that, I don't want anyone else to feel that way, because when you're gay, life is hard enough. Now you add being gay and having a disability and being a man of color in a country where only now people are a little bit more, like, I consider myself Australian. I've been here since 2005, you know, my everything. I feel, in fact, when I go back to India, I feel like a foreigner there, because.
Yeah, I bet. Yep.
Because also things have changed so much there that I can't relate to it, because for me, I'm frozen in time. So, you know, so for someone who's sort of, I've touched wood, I've never felt any racism here.
Mm.
A lot of my friends of color have experienced racist people. And so I just feel like I want to represent. People have this, I don't know, I think it's really easy to hate on people, and it comes down to not knowing enough. So what I'm doing now, or what I feel like I want to do, is say, you know, I'm just breaking it down like into really silly things, like, not all gay people are shallow. Not all gay people are obsessed with six packs. Not all gay couples cheat on each other. Not all people with disabilities are miserable. Mm. Not all people with disabilities are alone. You know, not all Australians are racist, because amongst my friends that are of color, this racism thing is really, it's like a topic of conversation that comes up all the time, and I'm like, why do you keep talking about this? Because I've never felt it, like, you know.
And and at a certain point, and anyone with any situation has to decide, am I giving more power to this because I'm choosing to dwell on it and talk about it and make it part of my life? Or am I choosing to live exactly how I want to? And when, quote unquote, problems, and I mean, yeah, sure, racism is a problem, yes, when it comes up, I will deal with it. But outside of that, if I don't feel a need to go out and be an activist or change the world, I would hope that those people were living their life to the max and not just dwelling on a potential problem and giving it more power than it actually has if they choose to live instead of choosing to dwell.
Yeah. So I get annoyed when I see people use a certain situation, and I'm probably going to get attacked for saying this, but I don't care. But I feel like people sometimes use their the fact that makes them different as a way to complain and you know, and make issues out of something that don't exist. So I I'm not friends with her anymore, but I had this friend from a certain country. She was she's brown, comes from an extremely conservative country, leading a really luxurious life here, independent, all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yet she would constantly bitch and moan about racism and, you know, how this country is not doing good to her. And I was like, if you're so miserable, go back.
Mm.
Why are you sitting here living your life like you are, which I know you can't do back there, and complaining for no reason? Like, some people, just because they're brown, will just have this attitude that all white people are racist.
Yeah.
That really irritates me.
I think it's called victimhood. It's a flavor of victimhood.
Correct.
Yeah. It's like, you know, I don't like my life. I don't like my choices. I don't know who I am. I don't know what I'm doing. But that's not anybody else's fault. It's up to you, as soon as you're ready, to accept responsibility for yourself in your life, to look inside of yourself, to accept you and love you and choose to enable your life your way as soon as you want to. And until then, because you don't like things, if you want to, you can blame whatever the hell you want. Now, none of that diminishes the fact that racism, homophobia, discrimination, and bad behavior exist pretty much everywhere and always have, and probably to some extent always will. But you are free. You can do your very best. And if you're the one stopping you from your doing your very best, I hope you can find your way to doing something about that, to improve your own situation.
You're absolutely right there. And I think the thing that irritates me about that is I'm not the only one, but I've had it rough in life.
Yeah.
Okay? Yep. But I still enjoy life. I don't like complaining for no reason.
Yep.
And when I see people that are fully abled, successful, and they're complaining, and I just realized one day, I was like, they might have all the wealth. They might be driving an Audi. They might be working, you know, a six-figure salary, all that sort of stuff. But they're deep down, they're not happy.
Yeah. And then none of that stuff matters, does it?
Yeah, it doesn't matter. So the funny thing is I get attacked sometimes on social media for my way of dealing with my disability is have fun, laugh at me.
Pretty fly for a blind guy.
Yeah, pretty fly for a blind guy. But you'll be surprised how many times I have received nasty messages saying, this is such a serious matter. How can you make fun of this? Blah, 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 blah. And my attitude is, this is my channel.
Exactly.
This is how I deal with it.
It's your life.
If you don't like it, please unfollow me. No one's forcing you to follow me.
Exactly.
So that's my way of coping is making fun of my disability, because what am I going to do? Sit around and cry all day? Or I'm going blind. Wham, wham, wham. There's nothing. That's not going to change anything.
There's a funny and sad way in which your courage and your love and your self-compassion and your silliness and your just being human about it in the best way you know how threatens them, because they're like, I'm not doing that. I don't have that. I feel sad inside. And so they go up to you and they're like, they'll make you the enemy. It's your fault. You're doing it wrong. You're not sad enough to justify them. That's up to them. They're putting that on you, and that's not right. They're crossing the line into your business. And what they really need to do is sort out their business.
And you know, there's like a million Facebook groups where people have disabilities, and I've joined them and they're all complaining. And I was just like, you know what, let's spread some joy. So I started making these funny things, and I would put it up on the groups, and I'd be like, guys, follow me because I want to make you laugh.
Mm.
And I would get two reactions, stop advertising your profile. And I swear to God, my aim was not to advertise. My aim was lighten up a little bit.
Right.
See, you can laugh at yourself, you know, like blindness doesn't mean your life is over.
Yeah.
And the second thing I would get is, how dare you disrespect our condition just because you have, you know, the support you need doesn't belittle what other people are. I'm like, that is not what I'm doing. I'm just trying to literally spread some joy. Like, you know, blind people can laugh. Blind people should laugh. Blind people should be happy.
Everyone should make fun of themselves.
Exactly.
It's so healthy. Like
if I sit down and think that in a couple of years, whatever little I see will be gone, if I just sit and dwell on that, where would I go?
Yeah, it'll fuck you up.
I would end up hating my life, and whatever little eyesight I have left, by the time I lose it, I'll just be sitting in a room going, poor me, poor me, poor me. And I can't stand that attitude. Yeah.
And you're not necessarily going to do that at all. There's still a billion roads that you haven't had to walk down yet, so you don't know what they are. But there's no one can tell you that you're not going to be having the best time of your life 10 years from now. You don't know.
That's absolutely right. But look, it is quite scary because it is scary. I'm not going to lie.
Definitely.
You know, there will be days where I would be having the best day ever, and then I would have something right in front of me and I can't see it. And I'd be like, where is it? Where is it? Where is it? And I'll find this right in front of me, and I'll get upset.
Yeah.
And then I hold on to that for a couple of hours. But then I sort of snap out of it.
Yeah.
I mean, things change. So I guess what scares me is that my case is much more severe than my mom's. So my mom went totally blind in her mid to late 50s. I'm 36, and I'm, as for my dad, at least 15 years ahead of my mom when she was at her age.
Yeah.
And it turns out that the gene that I have is quite rare.
Yeah.
So I was quite demoralized. I don't know if you follow me on Instagram, but I put up a post 2 days ago comparing my latest scan to a normal retina, and the pigments have increased drastically.
Mm.
And what that I went to the Lions Eye Institute. They're quite like well known, and I was expecting answers. And you know, I've got hearing loss. I've probably got Usher syndrome because anyway. So they were like, "Oh, what you have is quite rare. We think it's this. We can't confirm. We need to do testing, but we won't get the results for 2 years.
Jesus.
And I was like, sorry, what?
Yeah,
like,
it doesn't help me.
So I was like, so they're like, it is retinitis pigmentosa, but it's probably best not to put it under that because it's a little rare. Mm. So I'm like, I said, I'm raising awareness. What do you want me to do? She's like, oh, you could still say it's retinitis pigmentosa, but you can't say what type you have till for at least 2 years, and it requires a lot of testing. So
okay.
I came back quite demoralized, and yeah. That was recently. And I had that one or two days where I didn't leave the bed because I was quite, you know, when you go in expecting answers and you come back with even more confusion, it's quite demoralizing because this is like a specialist, like he's like Lion's Eye Institute is quite well known.
Yeah.
And to come back, you're going blind, but we don't know what's causing it. And you, yeah, it's pretty bad. And yeah, yep, your hearing's going bad as well. So I had that little, not pity party, but the feeling sad. Like,
absolutely.
You know, yeah. And then I got over it. And this is why I feel it is so important to do what I'm doing, because I want other people that are having these days to get on Instagram, see me making fun of myself and my situation. And yeah, at the same time, I am raising awareness. I'm talking about serious stuff as well, but I'm saying, you know, lighten up a little bit. Like, you know, when you, and you can't change something, when you change your destiny, the only thing you can change is how you're dealing with the present.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're showing up, you're accepting your challenge, you're not fighting reality, and that means you're truly living.
I am.
And you're getting the benefits of that as well, because you seem really happy.
But don't get me wrong, my life has changed. I prefer not to go out. So, for example, my perfect way of socializing is at home or at a friend's house.
Yeah, get your besties over, break out the cheese.
Yeah,
have a good chat.
The reason for that is I can control the music. So if it's too loud,
yeah,
and my hearing aid's picking up too much, I can control the sound. If it's too dim, I can turn all the lights on, you know? So if I go to a friend's house for a party, I could be like, you know, Eva, can you please turn the lights on? It's too dark. I mean, they'll do it.
Yeah.
But if you go out to a club or a bar,
yeah, you can't.
It's pitch black. Yeah.
Oh, well, clubs suck. House parties are the best parties. But yeah, I wish you could go to both, man. I'm sorry that your options are limited, but your situation is your situation. You are accepting it. You're doing the very best you can with it, and you are reaping the benefits.
Thank you.
So the last section I have, and hang on. Thank you. Thank you for everything that you're doing and being who you are and showing up as you do. It genuinely is inspirational, and I don't say that in a cliche way. It actually is, and I hope that you continue to show up this way, and I hope you reap all the benefits of doing so for the very rest of your life, and I hope to be in touch with you for as many years as we have, and as long as we want to know each other, we will and we can.
Thank you. I cringe every time someone calls me inspirational, but
I'll you know what I mean.
But I'll say thank you.
Well, maybe you are actually a bigger deal than you're willing to admit at the moment. And it's not because you're blind. It's not because you're gay. It's not because you're a migrant. It's because who you are and what you're doing and how you're doing it actually is pretty fucking special. And a lot of people wish they had what you have and what you are achieving. And I don't mean that, not your awareness, not your self-promotion. No, in your ability to show up in life, love yourself, be yourself, that's kind of everything, dude.
And on that note, I do want to say that it has taken me a long time to get here. People just think I'm like this because I'm like this.
No.
I have had severe mental health issues. I have been, without giving away too much information, I've been in mental hospitals for a month. There was a time where I spent 1 month in there.
Mm.
I, you know, I have scars all over my arm from self-harm when I was younger, when I'm in my 20s. So I don't want people, this is what irritates me, is people just think, oh, he's just like that. I'm not just like that. I've had it really rough. I've had it really, really rough, you know.
Mm.
To have no family here and to go through all of this on my own, I've really suffered as well. But then I pulled myself out of that. So the thing that irritates me is not just the fact that people want to live in, well, some people just feel like this is it. They have to be miserable and unhappy because life has been mean to them. The other thing that irritates me is people think I was just born this way.
Yeah. No, I think you've demonstrated that that's not the case.
This is why I'm doing what I'm doing. It's because I want people to know, I know life sucks now. I know you've hit rock bottom. I've been there too, but come up with me, you know?
Yeah. Beautiful. We definitely need to stay in touch because you can go from awareness to more. Like I do coaching. I can imagine you not needing to see at all, but you know, maybe having a helper, but definitely using technology and perhaps a helper. Maybe there is a pathway for you to fall into a career of talking to people that absolutely helps them.
I wish I could do that, you know, but then I'm not qualified. I'm not a psychologist.
Enter the world of life coaching and a zany, unqualified psychopath doing crazy things. Let me tell you more about it later. Well, if you're interested, I can absolutely help you out.
Sure, I'd love to know more.
But, you know, we don't do anything clinical. We don't mess with drugs. We don't pretend to help anybody with severe depression or suicidality. We help people go from average people, go from average or bad to excellent. And if that's of interest to you, you can certainly pick it up as a career. It's working for me. I absolutely love it. I've got a zany question round for you.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yes.
When's the last time you did a poo?
This morning. Thanks for asking.
Was it good?
I'm getting quite uncomfortable now.
It's fine. No. It's fine. A cartoon.
Please. Hang on. Yeah. Define a good poo.
It feels good. You just know in your soul that it was a good poo.
Okay. Speaking like a true gay man, enjoying some sort of anal pleasure out of even pooping. But okay.
Was it a good poo?
It was a good poo. Thank
you. Nice. Nice. Are cartoons just for kids?
Absolutely not.
What country is the best country on earth for you?
Amsterdam.
Ooh, why?
Well, yeah. I saw the gay pride parade. The canal was just like done up so beautifully. That is the one place in the world where I have felt safe to be myself. Nice. As a gay man. Yeah.
Yeah. I know that tons of all over Amsterdam, there are rainbow flags outside of otherwise innocuous pubs. And I'm like, oh my God, it really is just part of the fabric here. This isn't a special location. This is just our location.
No, exactly.
That's very special.
I was with my ex at that time. We went to a club that night and literally we're sitting there. There was a line. We waited about an hour to get into a club. And by the time we got our drinks and we sat down, there were some chairs and there were people having sex right next to us.
Oh, like wow. It was insane.
Yeah. Heaven. I couldn't see anything, unfortunately.
Oh. You could smell things.
Oh, gross.
Okay. Loincloths or Speedos?
How about none?
None. All right. Your dad sees your last 10 porn searches. Is he proud or does it make him sad?
Probably makes him sad.
Okay. Same question, but for mum.
My mum's quite kinky, actually. She was
she might be proud.
But she might be like, oh, okay, tell me more why you want to watch this.
Yeah, that's cute. Are gay men too serious or not serious enough?
You get some that are so shallow where talking about Britney Spears' highlights is considered serious, and then you get some that are activists. So it's hard to say.
Yeah, that's a really good response.
How about we find more balanced gay people? I would love that.
Nice. Beer or mixer drinks?
Ooh, why not both?
Okay. Red, white, or rosé?
Red.
Do you feel ashamed of your answer?
No.
Okay, great. Candles. That's a question. Candles. Candles?
Yes, obsessed with candles.
Cool. Would you marry, I know that you've got a partner, but would you marry a bisexual man?
No.
Ooh. Ooh. Let's just leave that one. No, shall we? Is there a short answer as to why? Is it the I don't trust them thing?
It's not the I don't trust them thing. It's just I would never feel completely good enough. Like, I feel like it's bad enough thinking your partner could find are the men attractive? And now you add women to the mix. It's like, fuck me.
Oh, dear. I'm going to have to now get a bisexual person on because I've opened an absolute can of worms there. I know where you're coming from, but that's actually, there's a lot to that. It's pretty fascinating. I promise sooner or later, I'll find a bisexual man or woman, I guess, to come on the show and I'll take it from there, but we can't do that today. Do you wish it was still socially permissible to take a packed school lunch to work? You know, a little juice box, couple of nuts, an apple, Vegemite sandwich?
Yeah.
Yeah? Why would? Sounds good. Yeah. Favorite Disney film?
That's a tough one. That's a really tough one.
Nothing in particular, or you love them all?
Yeah, I can't pick one. There's too many.
and you love them or you don't love them?
I do. I like the older stuff. The newer stuff is, I'm not a fan.
Okay, fair enough. Do you have a favorite gay film?
A favorite gay film? Does Sound of Music count?
Yes.
Okay, there you go.
What do you do with your belly button fluff?
I don't get any, surprisingly.
Wow, okay.
I don't.
Must be the shirts that you wear.
Must be. I just wear cotton t-shirts.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm one that feels really hot, like no matter where I am. So I never have layers on.
Mm.
That's why.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nintendo, PlayStation. I do love belly buttons, you like belly buttons?
Yeah. I keep playing with David's belly button. Aww. That's my comfort zone. Oh, yeah.
Do you lick it?
No, I just put my finger in it.
I do that too.
Like, how deep can it go?
Do you have any hitherto undisclosed kinks? Like, are you into something but you haven't told me or haven't told anybody?
No.
Okay. Do you have a favorite Pokemon?
No, I never got into it.
Okay. Favorite wrestler?
Ooh, The Undertaker.
Oh, good choice. Favorite movie star?
Male or female?
Whatever.
I like Reese Witherspoon a lot.
Oh, nice. All right, last one. Do you love me?
Do I love you?
Yeah.
Of course.
Yay, I love you too, Karen.
Yeah, I'll take the check later.
You don't get no check. You already got your love. That is it for today. Thank you very much for spending time with us, Karen. You are a delightful person. Where can people find you and your socials? Please plug yourself.
Okay. Well, first of all, thank you for having me. I really enjoyed this conversation. If you follow me, I'm on Instagram. I'm on a lot of platforms, but the one I use the most is Instagram. And if I have to spell it out, it is, KARANNAGRANI, and I'm sure you can add the link.
Yes, I will. I will add it into the Instagram description and hopefully also the show notes. I will help people find you, no problem.
I also want to say, if you're easily offended, please don't follow me because I will probably offend you.
If you're easily offended, do something about it, please.
Yeah.
Do us a favor. We love you and we want you to feel better. That you're bringing your offense to everything is not helping anybody.
Exactly.
Thank you once again for listening to Gayborhood Podcast. I've been Edward. You can find me on email at edward@gayborhoodpodcast.com and on Instagram at Gayborhood Podcast. Please share us with a friend or two. Definitely share Karen's socials with any disabled mates you have that think that might enjoy his posts. I think they're quite quirky and delightful myself. And would you please consider supporting the show with $5 a month at Patreon? That's patreon.com/gayborhood podcast. A fair chunk of time, love, and money goes into this, so thank you very much if you choose to support. And until next time, take care, love yourself, love your neighbors, make love to them if that feels good for everyone involved, and remain vibrantly, beautifully you.
You didn't ask me my favorite drag queen. Like, what kind of gay interviewer are you?
That's exactly the fucking point, isn't it? We just got through over an hour of interview. No drag queen talk. How did we do that? What?
I don't know.
I even like Drag Race. I do.
I love Drag Race.
Damn. We've ruined it. Maybe I should have asked you about Drag Race.
You should have. God, I have lots of TV and drag queens are concerned. So
we'll have to do this again sometime.
Okay, sounds good.
All right. Thank you very much for coming, Karen.
Thank you.
We'll talk soon. Bye, mate.